Thanks very much for joining me. I'm Bob Franklin. Today, an encore interview featuring the godfather of soul, James Brown. Brown was born May 3rd, 1933 in Barnwell, South Carolina, and Brown died Christmas Day 2006. James Brown inspired and touched the lives of millions through his music, activism, and lived experiences. Bobby Rush, a multiple Grammy Award-winning blues man, share some thoughts about his friend, James Brown.
My name is Bobby Rush. I'm sitting here in New York City looking out on my balcony, thinking about some things back in the past. Think about when I was a child, when I was a young man, knowing a good friend of mine, the late James Brown, the godfather of soul. I remember meeting him when we was both about 20, 25 years old. First time I met him was in Chicago. Second time was in Macon, Georgia. In Chicago was a gentleman at King Records. Sonny Thompson introduced me to him. And he said to me, Bobby Rush, be independent. Do what you do because you're the artist. Don't let anybody tell you what to do or when to do it. Be independent. And I gained a lot of that from James Brown because he was a hell of a businessman. Do what he do well, and he demand his money, demand respect when he did what he did. So I gotten a lot of that from my friend James Brown. Him and Sam Cooke and people like that meant so much to me. And I'm here now in New York City. Last night I did the night show. It was centered around Dan Aykroyd, who's one of the actors in the movie of Get On Up. Saluting James Brown. It's all about James Brown. The people who acting around James Brown, doing what James Brown did with the fast feet, with the dancing, with the performer, with the writing, with the showmanship, the whole bit. I got a lot of my things from James Brown. Because if it wasn't for the people like James Brown, it wouldn't be no Bobby Rush. So James Brown, love you. My hats off to what you did, what you stood for, and what you left here with me. I appreciate that. Love you.
For you folks out there who may not know, I'll give you a hint. I just gave you a hint. Let me bring on the one and only, the godfather of soul, Mr. James Brown. Mr. Brown, thank you for being a guest today on Like It Is.
Living in America! It's very, very, it's an opportunity, a privilege, and I just thank you so very, very much for all the fine things you're doing for the community and the enlightenment that is being sent through your facilities. I think it's just a fantastic thing, and this is where maybe a lot of radio stations and television are breaking down and falling short by not delivering the message.
We appreciate those encouraging words. Let's talk about you, your life. Let's trace your life. Let's go back a little bit and tell me about your life, how you got started, and your beginnings. And tell me about your beginnings and what you're doing now today.
Well, I tell you, I can briefly say it without burning up so much of your time, because I don't think there's enough time on one radio station, or two, or 15, or 100, to tell all of my things. I thank God I've been very blessed. God has blessed me, and the people have expressed the love for me. I started very, very early in my life. I started around, say, 16 or 17, singing on talent shows in Augusta, Georgia, and playing regional jobs, singing. But then there was a downtime, and that downtime, I was away from the business. Then I came back when I was 22 years old, and I started to record. I was in Macon, Georgia. I recorded Please, 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 and I put it on an acetate. Now, you out there, an acetate is what you refer to as a practice record. We put it on the air, a radio station, WIBB in Macon, who also later on helped Otis Redding, and before me helped Little Richard. We recorded Try Me, and we recorded Please, Please, and several other songs. But we worked out with Please, Please. And when we worked with Please, Please, everybody was just crazy about it. And I went to Tampa, Florida, and while I was in Tampa, a scout from King Records of Cincinnati, Ohio, who at that time had many, many very important people, like the Five Royals, who you probably don't know, who sang Dedicated to the One I Love, before the Mamas and the Papas, then also, and before the Shirelles. Also, we had Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, who made The Twist before Chubby Checker. We had Otis William and the Charms, who made Hearts Made of Stone. And I can tell you on and on. But they heard my record, and they went out of their mind. And I went to cut Please, Please, and it was a smash hit. And it still is, thank God for that. It sold over 7 or 8 million copies. And then I just kind of wandered on along. I cut Don't Be a Dropout in 68, said Loud, I'm Black, I'm Proud. I spoke after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. And I don't have to tell you all of my songs because I think you know. But to make a long story short, I trusted in God, and then I went out and went to work for myself. And I advise all the young people out there, if you want a job, go get a job, and then deal with that until you can get the job that you want or you think that's right for you to give you a future. And that's what I've been fighting for, to help humanity. Now I have a song now called Can't Get Any Harder. Now, I recorded this song because of the violence that we have. People just slaughtering each other, and young people are doing that basically in the ghetto and the rural areas of the city. The low-income, poor-income people are just getting frustrated and demolishing themselves. Now, I challenge all you young people out there to wake up and be proud and stand up for yourself. That don't mean do wrong. It means stand up for yourself. Govern yourself accordingly and be somebody. I would like to see each and every one out there operate to their fullest, maximize all their efforts, and do better and get ahead. I got this song called How Long Will It Carry On? It started off by saying, I heard the news, and it's no surprise. A moment of sadness, another brother died by the hand of the culture, or one of its own. Babies having babies before they're fully grown. How long will it carry on? And I can't give you my whole life story. I'm so proud of WSM here and the gentleman that's on air to ask for it. But my story can go very simple. I love you. I fight for you. I respect you. And I'm asking you out there, young people, to respect yourself. And remember, some of the things may sound crazy, are still very, very much up to date. Honor thy father and thy mother, and your days will be longer.
Mr. Brown, I want to maybe have you tell me, why do you think we have so much violence, and why do you believe that we have so much black-on-black and teenage violence going on in our communities across the country?
I'm going to tell you right up. The contributions that are made by rap music that's vulgar and detrimental to the growth of humanity, the growth of young people, the growth of this country, keeps the air fogged up, and we can't get ourselves together. Hostility can go too far, and the vulgar stuff, when you record a song that you can't take home to your mother, it's just disgraceful. That's a major a part of it. Next is the fact that they are forgetting the family ties. The mothers and the dads have got to throw the arm around them and hug them and tell them that they love them and give them a program that will make it. Like believing in yourself. That's the greatest program in the world. Self-determination, self-belief. That's what's happening to our country. That's the reason why we are not making. They're depressed. Their families are depressed. They figure to sell drugs. They can make $1,000 a day. But what you're doing is cutting your days and shortening your own days and diminishing your own stability. You're killing your neighbors, your people. You're destroying yourself, and you're destroying your families and your country. Wake up and live. That's what our problem is. We are depressed, oppressed, then we're down, we're not doing anything to help, and we're giving up before we give out.
Well, you know, Mr. Brown, you're a tremendous role model to very many, quite a few African-Americans and others. Let's talk about, briefly, you fell from grace just a little bit as a result of substance abuse, and you served time in prison.
You asking me? Are you reading the news?
I'm reading from this particular.
I thought you were reading also all that. I have a judge sitting right there with me right now named Judge Bradley. That never appeared.
Okay.
See,
well, clear
that. But that was
for
what
us.
They wanted you to believe.
Okay, clear.
And I didn't fall from grace. How you fall from grace if more people, everybody wanting you to get out? When you fall from grace, people are through with you. They realize it. And luckily for me, and hopefully it was education to you, less than a year later, you were riding a can. See, you just, I knew you had to be reading. And you probably would have been better if you asked me straight out, which I can understand, you know, what you're saying. But sometimes we're getting a little lost from what we're about. And we've got to make sure that what is going on, it comes down the grapevine correct, not incorrect. If it had been for the people and the riots, they would have made you believe that Rodney King's head jumped on his sticks. See, so those things happen. We've got good and bad and everything. Those people did wrong. There was a gentleman, there was a deputy sheriff sitting right there with me. It wasn't even about drugs. It was about they made a mistake. And when they made the mistake, they came up with everything they could come up with.
So a man of your stature, a man of my
pigmentation, and then your stature. Your pigmentation goes forever. I mean, Hank Aaron broke all the records Babe Ruth ever set. And they don't never show you nothing about Hank Aaron. They're still showing Babe Ruth movies. So it ain't about who's first. It's about who can get into the press and who have the insight and the control over dominating the press.
So, in other words, you're saying that traces of racism are very prevalent throughout our society, in particular the situation involving you.
Well, racism, yeah. Well, racism is, I think, they're going to protect the police whether it's white or black. They're not going to ever go against the police. If he's wrong, he almost will have an in-house program. And that's a mistake. If you got the police is no good, you got to really make him move him right away, because that's like having a rotten apple in a barrel of fresh ones. I won't be based on just racism by itself. I'll base it on control. I think a lot of us got racism and control confused. You know what I'm saying? Had it been a white man, it would have been the same thing. Because they're not going to let you win against the police. And that's wrong. It's better to take that police, take him off the force, and cut him off than to have another Los Angeles program and those things happen to you. So Reginald Denny and all them people won't be caught in the middle. Right now, I just happen to have on hand Judge Al Bradley. He would be glad to give you some comments if you like some.
Good afternoon. How are you doing, sir?
I'm fine. How are you today, Judge?
Fine. My name is Judge Al Bradley. I'm a presiding judge in Aiken County, in the county which Mr. Brown resides in, and was tried and convicted of a traffic violation. Mr. Brown has never been convicted or charged in a drug charge. That was in the newspapers. He was charged and convicted for failing to stop for a blue light, which is a traffic violation.
Judge, is that
all he was guilty of?
Judge, is that rather harsh for a man of Mr. Brown's stature to be convicted on that? Is that standard procedure? Is that out of the ordinary?
No, it's not. It was very harsh. Matter of fact, Mr. Brown has the record for being sentenced more severe than anyone else ever being sentenced for failing to stop for a blue light. It's normally a $500 fine.
But the media did it.
But the media blew it out of proportion, and that's what happened as a result of the media being involved.
Well, let's talk about it. Was it the media or was it the authorities who made the final determination?
The authorities only did what the people demanded.
So let's talk about the media. The media has been accused of trying and convicting people before a jury. As you see it and as you understand it, why and what did the media have to stand to gain as a result of convicting a man of the stature of Mr. Brown, from your perspective?
It's about the financial rewards that will be gained from the community. Let's not retry Mr. Brown.
Sure.
We don't mind commenting on what's a fact. We don't want to add to the newspaper or the radio or television something that's not fact. I'm going to comment on what's fact. The fact is that Mr. Brown was convicted by a jury, not of his peers, but the ones that was chosen, of failing to stop for a blue light. And that's all that Mr. Brown was found guilty of. So there's nothing else to discuss about Mr. Brown's character.
Well, I appreciate, Judge, you coming forward, and I just thank God that you're here today, because it was nice. The young man asked what he thought was important. But you see, we should never get caught with our pants down. They would make you think that Marcus Garvey fell from grace. Martin Luther King fell from grace. Meg Evers fell from grace. They'll make you think that Elijah Muhammad was a bad guy. They'll make you think that Muhammad Ali was bad. But see, we have to get beyond that. We as a people must get beyond that. We must. That's when I said, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. But before I put that song out, you were colored Negroes, Skeeter Spider, and all that crazy stuff. And all it's self-determination. What do you want to do? How do you want to get out of it? It's up to you, it's left to you. And I say to you, I thank you very, very much. I thank you for all the things that you're doing. I thank you for the questions you ask. But we better get positive and leave the negatives alone, because the negatives will take care of itself.
Let's talk about some of the positive things that you're doing and have done. What do you believe to be your most positive contribution to the world of music?
My most positive contribution is staying loyal and staying determined to continue on and make better music and make clean music and make music work for you in a sense that it will work for you positive. Tell people how great they are. Tell them what the attributes are. Tell them how they can make greater attributes and make them feel that, yes, like Jesse Jackson say, I am somebody.
Let's talk about rap music. I know you've influenced not only rap artists, but you've influenced pop artists and what have you. How detrimental do you believe rap music to be for our young kids out there? Or is it more a responsibility of parents taking control of their children as opposed to blaming it on rap music? Do you see a correlation between parents not taking control of their children and rap
you
music?
You can't take control of something you hear every night, 24 hours a day. But it's not only just rap. It's movies as well. You got to turn the television off, too, when certain shows come on. And on top of that, you got hard rock, which started way before rap. So we got to say music in general. So the FCC has to put some kind of tight guidelines on people that play that kind of lyrics and just pull those lyrics out. Because some rap music is positive. So you can't knock this rap music, but there are lines, certain things that come through rap, hard rock, and the television shows themselves. Because I watched television the other night, and it wasn't any different than watching an adult movie. Because they did the same thing right on open television.
I'm very privileged today to have as my guest the godfather of soul, Mr. James Brown. He's been so gracious to give us a few kind words and words of encouragement, as well as Judge Bradley, who spoke earlier on some topics of interest to Mr. Brown, as well as interesting points for our audience as well. Mr. Brown, I know you're a very busy man. What do you see yourself doing in the future, right now, present, and that's going to make the world take up, shake, look around, and take notice?
We're going to make them go back to the crossroads and go back to what made them good. Like the impression say, the same thing took to get this country, it's going to take the same thing to keep it. I've been saying all along, a man don't want to destroy his home, but he want to build it up. I will continue pushing education, because if you don't know it, you can't do it. I continue to be with good people like Judge Bradley and Attorney Simmons and beautiful people that I work with, Albert Dallas, Mr. David Cannon, who's a man who's helped me in some areas that we are not very strong in, an accountant and a CPA environment. I'm going to continue keep loving humanity, thanking God for it each and every day, and hoping that when Maryland University turned my little daughter loose, Yama Brown, that she'll be as sharp as you.
That's very great. Let's talk about some of your musical idols. I know every musician out there idols you, but growing up and patterning yourself, who did you look to as an idol?
I looked at Louis Jordan, Roy Brown, and that was as far as I went with it. But I admired a lot of people. I admired Bill Eckstein, Cab Calloway, all those people. But I took as an idol Louis Jordan and Roy Brown.
What's been the toughest lesson you've learned you're very instrumental, you're a very positive role model, but what's been the one lesson that you've learned and that has stayed with you over the years?
Before I leave, I'm going to say thank God for you, and I want to say this. The two things I've learned over the years is don't worry, be happy, live as long as you can, and die when you can't help it. I said, ciao. Thank God for you, and over and out.
The Godfather of Soul, Mr. James Brown. We go out on a selection from Mr. Brown. Mr. Brown, thank you, sir, for being a guest today on Like It Is.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
I got the feeling, baby, baby, I got the feeling. You don't know what to do to me. Leave my heart heavy down in misery.
In the final Like It Is segment, Lori Gray spotlights Craig Adams, the former roadie for the R&B group Destiny's Child.
Craig Adams is a professional trainer and the former road manager for the R&B singing group Destiny's Child. He became involved with the group almost from the very beginning, first as the personal trainer and then as the tutor. Craig says he took on the position road manager because of his care for the group. It was a position that gave him a first-hand look at the business of music and literally took him around the world. Craig, you were road manager to Destiny's Child. But how did you first become involved with the girls?
Just a childhood friend, Charlotte Strong, happens to be Latavia's mother, happened to be my very first client as I took off in my training business. And I would train Cheryl three times a week, 5 o'clock in the morning, see her out at a social event the night before, and says, hey, I'll be there at 5 o'clock. Hello.
Wow.
And from there, I was introduced to Tina, who is Beyonce's mother, and I trained a group of friends for her. And from there, the girls were in recording for the first album, and they were in preparation for the second video, but No, 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 Part 2. Mm. And I was asked to help train them and you know, just fine-tune them for the video. That in turn led me to becoming their tutor. They were being taken out of, had already been taken out of the normal school setting, and so we were gonna homeschool them. And from there, I became the tutor through the process of now Columbia says, hey, we're gonna do Young Soul Power Tour. Okay, so Matthews, you know, it had been mentioned before that, you know, the possibility was there that I would go out on the road with them. And I never really, really thought about it. Mm. It just came to light all of a sudden. Brief conversations. Would you be available? Could be at the drop of a hat. And surely it was at the drop of a hat.
So who were the girls originally? Because we know that the group has changed now, but who were the original girls when you came?
There was Beyonce Knowles, Latavia Robertson, and Kelly Rowland, and Latoya Luckett.
Okay. And so you knew Latoya even before then?
I knew Latavia even before then. I knew her, like I said, her mother and I grew up together, went to the same church. Her dad, neighborhood friend, you know, played a lot of basketball together, still friends today, and just through the girls. And even at that time, you know, I had heard mention of Girls Time and, you know, saw little clippings, little articles about, you know, these four girls from Houston, but never really knew I would have a connection to, the, you know, these four girls. I had seen the and I can't think of the name of the video, but they did a video with the rap artist, a little old. He was on MCA at the time. And it was their manager, Matthew Knowles, his first client. I saw that clipping of that video, but never really dawned on me that I would actually be right there working with those four girls and to see them grow and blossom in the music industry.
Well, so you mentioned Girls Time. Was that another name before it became Destiny's Child?
That was one of the many names. Girls Time, I think one name happened to be Dolls, and then other names, you know, tend to escape me. But the process of getting to where they are now, and just in conversation with Matt, he went through several girls to get to where they are.
Wow.
Several. Fact of the matter, with Beyonce, then Latavia auditioned to be in the group. There were four other girls. Latavia introduced Kelly to the group. Beyonce introduced Latoya to the group. Okay, and then from there, that's where it ended. Those four.
Were any of them related? Because we always thought that.
No relation.
No relation.
Just, you know, became very good friends through the process of it all. Really got to know each other, their strengths, their weaknesses, and so forth. Just, you know, through the growth period, you can almost say they did become sisters.
Mm. What song, in your opinion, or what was the point that they moved from an unknown to a known recording artist?
You gotta say No, Part Two with Wyjah.
Yeah.
You know, with Clef. I mean, that song just happened to put them on the map. I mean, it couldn't have been a bigger blessing to have been able to work with Wyclef.
I want to thank Lori for producing that segment on Destiny's Child. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.